Greetings, this is Tyler McFeeters with your News Gazette, dated Friday, October 24th, 2025. We'll begin today's reading from the headline on the front page, Mohammed Seymour High School, It's Not About Winning, It's About the Journey. Marching Bulldogs director looking to cap 33-year career by defending title at Saturday's Illinois Marching Band Championships. Story by Rob LeCates. Out of Mohammed. On a cool, windy October afternoon after school, the 160-member Mohammed Seymour High School marching band trudged to the parking lot south of the softball fields for one of its last practices on the home turf. The band, made up of 3 drum majors, 21 percussionists, 22 color guards, and a near-even split between brass and woodwind players, practiced at least 8 hours a week every week, including a 40-hour band camp in the summer heat, since the start of the school year, all with an eye toward Saturday's Illinois Marching Band Championships at Geese Memorial Stadium. Not only do the Bulldogs have a Class 1A-3A Governor's Grand Champion Trophy to defend, Saturday is also the curtain call for band director Michael Stevens after a 33-year run at the school. Stevens was hired at Mohammed Seymour fresh out of Western Illinois University, where he earned his bachelor's degree in music in 1993. After teaching music alongside band director Dick Watkins for his first 7 years, Stevens was bumped up to band director in the fall of 2000. Strong support from both the administration and the community made him stay for a quarter century. "I never ever saw a reason to leave," Stevens said. "There was just nothing out there that I thought was going to be that much better." Grand finale. Saturday's performance, called The Writings on the Wall, will feature a mixture of music from Sunset Boulevard, Hamilton, and the 2015 James Bond film Spectre. The Bulldogs band director helped perfect the kids' performance this week. He stressed the need to adapt to colder and windier conditions, and more importantly, to have fun. "On Saturday, we don't know what's going to happen, but all we can do is control what we do, and we're going to do the best we can," he said. "Let the chips fall where they may." It's far from the program's first time on a big stage, with past Bulldogs marching bands playing in the Tournament of Roses Parade, at the Fiesta and Peach Bowls, and inside Indianapolis's Lucas Oil Stadium, among other destination spots. But the crowning achievement to Stevens' career has been being consistently recognized in the competition set for Saturday. "The 13 wins at the U of I as the Governor's Grand Champion was the highlight of my career," he said. "I had such great kids who have made this job such a joy, and all those things together are really special." A bittersweet end. At the beginning of the year, Stevens assigned section leaders to work with peers to build connections and learn from one another. As in past years, it worked wonders. Two of the student leaders, Allie Dilger and Cheyenne Stevens, started with Stevens in the final year of elementary school. "I felt like all the seniors have had some connection with him, and he is so good at building connections with people," Stevens said. "I feel like I can go talk to him and talk to him like he's my best friend." His investment plan worked for the senior woodwind section leader. "I want to come back next year and support the band and see how they do, and I'll bet you they'll do great with whoever comes in," Stevens said. The senior band members say the ending is bittersweet. "It's nice to be at the end of the season and look back at everything we've done, but also there's no more after this," Dilger said. Stevens will miss the only director she's known as she explores other interests outside band. She plans to attend the U of I, but is not studying music. "I'm definitely going to be sad to see Mr. Stevens go," she said. Dilger's favorite memories include how her professional role model conducted himself in public. "I'm definitely going to miss his teaching moments that you wouldn't think of until weeks and weeks later," Dilger said. "He would say something, and I'm like, okay, whatever, and then a month later, I realize what he's talking about." In retirement. Come spring, Stevens will turn in his room key and bid farewell. That is, until his daughter attends Mohammed Seymour in the coming years. In retirement, he looks forward to traveling with his family, spending more time with his soon-to-be 5 grandchildren, and playing his saxophone again, possibly in community bands. He'll most miss building relationships with the kids and seeing them succeed. "I'm looking for a new chapter in my life, and not that I haven't enjoyed the previous ones, he said. I just want something different, and I don't know what that is yet. Next on the front page stories is Missing Rankin Man. Authorities, identifying remains will take time. Story by Jennifer Bailey. Out of Rankin, Vermilion County Sheriff's Captain Mike Hartshorn said it could be days to months before remains found earlier this week in rural Champaign County and believed to be those of a missing Rankin man can be identified. He said the timeline will depend on the Illinois State Police Crime Lab. The Sheriff's Department announced Wednesday that a Peoria man has been charged in the 2024 murder of Frank Lucas of Rankin. Johnny Gibson, 56, was taken into custody at his residence and charged with murder, dismembering a human body, and concealing a homicidal death. He is being held in the Vermilion County Jail. Lucas, 55, was reported missing July 11, 2024. Investigators said he likely died of homicidal means and developed Gibson, a former neighbor, as a suspect. On Monday, investigators located human remains, believed to be Lucas, in a rural area near Ludlow. Identification of the remains is pending Illinois State Police Crime Lab results. Hartshorn said the human remains were found in the area where a Ludlow trailer park fire occurred Friday. It has nothing to do with the fire, he said. Information from another source led us there. When Lucas was first reported missing, Hartshorn said he had not been seen since July 8, 2024. He was last officially seen leaving a job site in Champaign County, Hartshorn said at the time. Lucas worked for a tree service. There's also a picture on the front page, a worthy winner. Becca Guyette Left accepts the Executive Club of Champaign County's 2025 Athena Leadership Award from Deborah Reardans, President CEO at Clark Lindsay Village and Guyette's future employer, at a reception in her honor Thursday night at the venue CU in Champaign. And there's a picture of a lady being passed a trophy. Next story on the front page is Bailey loses four family members in helicopter crash. The GOP gubernatorial candidate's son and daughter-in-law and two of their three children were killed in the crash Wednesday in Montana, his campaign said. More on that story now. We'll scoot over to the state news. Business trip to Montana. Four members of Bailey's family die in helicopter crash. Story by John Sewer and Christine Fernando. The Associated Press. Out of Chicago, four family members of Republican gubernatorial candidate were killed in a helicopter crash in Montana, his campaign said Thursday. The son, daughter-in-law, and two grandchildren of former state lawmaker Darren Bailey, who lost the 2022 gubernatorial election and is seeking his party's nomination again in next year's race, were killed in the crash Wednesday. Bailey previously served in both the Illinois House and Senate. Bailey's son, Zachary, his wife, Kelsey, and their two young children, Vada Rose, 12, and Samuel, 7, died in the crash in a remote area of eastern Montana, his campaign said in a statement. The couple's third child was not on the helicopter. Darren and Cindy are heartbroken by this unimaginable loss. They are finding comfort in their faith, their family, and the prayers of so many who love and care for them, the statement said. Zachary Bailey was piloting the helicopter when it went down, said Aaron Delmar, who is Darren Bailey's running mate and serving as a family spokesperson. They were in Montana on a business trip so that Zachary Bailey could expand their use of helicopters as part of the family's farm business, Delmar said. Bailey and his two brothers helped their father run their farm in south central Illinois. Zachary Bailey first got his helicopter license years ago, Delmar said, so that he could deliver medical supplies and aid to people in third world countries. That was a driving force for him to get his license, he said. The cause of the crash was not known, Delmar said. No one else was on board, he said. The National Transportation Safety Board said Thursday it was investigating the crash near the town of Ekalaka. The sheriff's office in Carter County said it responded to the site Wednesday evening southwest of the town in the hilly Chalk Butte area, where the flat-top buttes have few trees. Bailey, of Xenia, announced in September that he is seeking the GOP nomination for governor in 2026. He lost to heavily favored Governor J.B. Pritzker in 2022. Pritzker said Thursday that he and his wife expressed their condolences to the Bailey family. "I cannot imagine losing a child, losing two grandchildren, and what they must be going through," the governor said. Bailey, a staunch conservative, dramatically increased his statewide profile in 2020 as a frequent critic of Pritzker's approach to the coronavirus pandemic, including refusing to wear a mask during legislative sessions. During his run for governor, Bailey railed about crime in Chicago and proposed eliminating the state's gun licensing system, saying it doesn't stop people from using guns illegally. He once supported a resolution seeking to make Chicago a separate state. Bailey unsuccessfully challenged five-term incumbent Republican U.S. Representative Mike Bost in last year's primary race for a district that covers much of the bottom third of Illinois. Illinois GOP Chair Kathy Salvi said in a statement that the party is grieving the tragic loss. "Please join us in keeping the Bailey family in our thoughts and prayers during this unimaginable time," the statement said. Moving over to national and world news, Federal Emergency Management Agency, Vermont, Illinois, and Maryland left out of disaster declarations. Story by Gabriela Aun Anguera of the Associated Press. President Donald Trump approved major disaster declarations for Alaska, Nebraska, North Dakota, and the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe late Wednesday, while denying requests from Vermont, Illinois, and Maryland, and leaving other states still waiting for answers. The decisions fell mostly along party lines, with Trump touting on social media Wednesday that he had won big in Alaska in the last three presidential elections, and that it was his honor to deliver for the incredible patriots of Missouri, a state he also won three times. The disaster declarations authorized the Federal Emergency Management Agency to support recipients with federal financial assistance to repair public infrastructure damaged by disasters and, in some cases, provide survivors money for repairs and temporary housing. While Trump has approved more disaster declarations than he's denied this year, he has also repeatedly floated the idea of phasing out FEMA, saying he wants states to take more responsibility for disaster response and recovery. States already take the lead in disasters, but depend on federal assistance when the needs exceed what they can manage alone. Trump has also taken longer to approve disaster declaration requests than in any previous administration, including his first, according to an Associated Press analysis. The states approved for disaster declarations include Alaska, which filed an expedited request after experiencing back-to-back storms this month that wrecked coastal villages, displacing 2,000 residents and killed at least one person. Trump approved a 100% cost share of disaster-related expenses for 90 days. North Dakota and Nebraska will also receive public assistance for August severe weather, and the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe in Minnesota was approved for both public and individual assistance for a June storm that felled thousands of trees across its tribal lands. Trump denied four requests, including Maryland's appeal for reconsideration after the state was denied a disaster declaration for May flooding that severely impacted the state's two westernmost counties. Governor Wes Moore, a Democrat, denounced the decision in a statement Thursday, calling the final denial deeply frustrating. "President Trump and his administration have politicized disaster relief, and our communities are the ones who will pay the price," said Moore. "The state has been supporting impacted individuals itself, deploying over $450,000 for the first time from its state disaster recovery fund." Next national and world news story is crypto industry. Trump pardons Binance founder, high-profile cryptocurrency figure. Story by Will Weissert and Alan Suderman, The Associated Press. Out of Washington, President Donald Trump has pardoned Binance founder Changpeng Zhao who created the world's largest cryptocurrency exchange and served prison time for failing to stop criminals from using the platform to move money connected to child sex abuse, drug trafficking, and terrorism. The pardon caps a months-long effort by Zhao, a billionaire commonly known as CZ in the crypto world and one of the biggest names in the industry. He and Binance have been key supporters of some of the Trump family's crypto enterprises. Deeply grateful for today's pardon, and to President Trump for upholding America's commitment to fairness, innovation, and justice, Zhao said on social media Thursday. Zhao served 4 months in prison after reaching a deal with the Justice Department to plead guilty to charges of enabling money laundering at Binance. But in explaining the pardon, Trump said of Zhao, he was recommended by a lot of people. A lot of people say he wasn't guilty of anything, Trump said. He served 4 months in jail, and they say that he was not guilty of anything. The president added that he didn't believe he'd ever met Zhao personally, but had been told he had a lot of support, and they say what he did is not even a crime. He said Zhao had been persecuted by the Biden administration. I gave him a pardon at the request of a lot of very good people, Trump said. It's the latest move by a president who has flexed his executive power to bestow clemency on political allies, prominent public figures, and others convicted of crimes. White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt announced the pardon in a statement and later told reporters in a briefing that the White House Counsel's office thoroughly reviewed the request. She said the administration of Democratic President Joe Biden pursued an egregious oversentencing in the case, was very hostile to the cryptocurrency industry, and Trump wants to correct this overreach. The crypto industry has also long complained it was subject to a regulation by enforcement ethos under the Biden administration. Trump's pardon of Zhao fits into a broad pattern of his taking a hands-off approach to an industry that spent heavily to help him win the election in 2024. And next in national and world news is election 2026. Virginia Dems will try to reshape U.S. House districts in counter to Trump's redistricting push. Story by Olivia Diaz and David A. Lieb of the Associated Press. Out of Richmond, Virginia. Virginia Democrats are taking steps to redraw their state's U.S. House districts, hoping to boost their party's chances in next year's midterm elections and counter President Donald Trump's push for more partisan districts in Republican-run states. Virginia House Speaker Don Scott sent a letter Thursday to members telling them to convene Monday for a special session, but did not state a reason. The purpose includes congressional redistricting aimed at gaining more Democratic-held seats, according to four sources with direct knowledge of the plans, who spoke on condition of anonymity to the Associated Press because they are not authorized to publicly discuss them. Virginia would be the second state with a Democratic-led legislature after California to enter the national redistricting battle with enormous stakes. If Democrats gain just three more seats, they would take control of the House and effectively impede Trump's agenda. Republican lawmakers in Texas, Missouri, and North Carolina already have approved new congressional maps aimed at helping their party win more seats and retain the slim GOP House majority. And even more states are considering redistricting as the battlefront widens. A spokeswoman for Democrats' House campaign arm characterized Virginia's effort as the party pursuing every available tool to counter Republicans' desperate attempts to steal the midterms. Virginia's decision to convene and preserve the right to consider a new map in 2026 is crucial in the fight to ensure voters have fair representation, said Courtney Rice, communications director for the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. Republicans vowed to fight. Virginia House Minority Leader Terry Kilgore said Democrats missed their opportunity to carry out this procedure in 2026 and that it's too late constitutionally to do so. We are going to do everything legally we can do to stop this power grab, Kilgore said. We'll move over now to our communities. NAACP Champaign County. They're doing the work. At Saturday's 110th annual Freedom Fund banquet at the I Hotel, The NAACP Champaign County Branch will salute 5 individuals and 1 organization for going above and beyond in their work in educating children, feeding the hungry, and curbing gun violence, among other worthy causes. Editor Jeff D'Alessio asked 4 of the honorees about the achievement that makes them the proudest and what's next on their to-do lists. The Reverend Willie Comer, Executive Director, East Central Illinois Youth for Christ. I'm proud of multiple achievements. I will begin by acknowledging that 14 years ago, God had a vision for youth in Champaign and entrusted me with the vision by placing that vision within me. The Midnight Basketball Program is in its 14th year, and God has been with us all the way. Over the past 14 years, we have had the opportunity to share the gospel with thousands of kids, some of whom are now adult volunteers, some who are fathers, and others who are simply concerned community members. The team and I have seen preteens become teens and teens become young men who are caring for their families, and now bring their sons and daughters into the gym. However, in addition to midnight basketball, I'm also proud of the Lunch Crew program for middle and high school students, which allows us to build relationships with them over lunch, as well as the outreach work of Youth for Christ and Berean Covenant Church, which serves every summer through the Campference, Corner Prayer, and Built Construction Ministries and Programs. One significant milestone happened this summer after the shooting in Oak Trace Apartments. We were scheduled to go into the Oak Trace community the next day. My phone began ringing, asking what we were going to do. After praying, I told everyone we were going in because God wanted to restore hope and peace to that community. Everyone showed up ready to work with no fear. It takes an entire community of believers to know that the work of the Lord doesn't stop and that God has not given us the spirit of timidity, but of power, love, and a sound mind. Finally, I am most proud to have the support of my wife, Zabrina, the YFC board and staff, the Berean Covenant Church staff, the honor of the NAACP, and the support of the community. Barbara Suggs Mason, NAACP Education Chair. First, I am humbled and grateful that the NAACP is recognizing me for my work as the Education Chair of the Champaign County Branch, and I want to thank the branch as well as my committee members for all they do. As chairperson, I coordinate the branch's annual Real Men Read program. Real Men Read programs are held throughout the country, using positive male role models to encourage literacy with children, especially boys, by coming into the classroom to read and interact with the students. We try to schedule at least 2 elementary schools annually, generally around National African American Parent Involvement Day. It really depends on the number of men who volunteer and working with the building principal to select dates and times. It makes for a great morning and fun to see these men interact with the children in the classrooms. We have been lucky to secure volunteers representing a wide variety of ages, with some of our local men in college representing their fraternities, retirees, local ministers, and even our local police chiefs. I also coordinate the branch's annual scholarship program, which recognizes graduating seniors and Champaign Central, Centennial, Rantoul Township, and Urbana high schools, providing scholarships to assist in furthering their college education. Working with the high school principals and counseling departments, we've been able to select some outstanding young people. We began an annual scholarship reception for these seniors each summer so that they and their families can be introduced and recognized by our members. We have some really great kids in our communities with great grade point averages who are active in so many positive ways in and out of school. It is an honor to help celebrate them and their families. What's next? There are many concerns about the lack of Black student achievement overall. I know that's controversial, and there are several initiatives. I'm hoping our committee can be a part of building relationships with our school districts and other organizations to collaborate on developing workshops on family and community engagement in our children's education, as well as working together as a community to improve our students' academic progress. St. Luke CME Church Food Pantry. It Takes a Village is a term that has much significance for the members of the St. Luke CME Church Food Pantry, founder Patricia McKinney Lewis says. When I started the food pantry in 2010, I had no idea of how much work would be required. It's been worth every minute. God gave me the vision to start the pantry. Learning that there wasn't one located in the North End, and after reading about the rising number of families in Champaign County that were struggling to provide food, I called my pastor, the Reverend Dr. Clarence Buchanan, who was very supportive. Early on, it was hard work and a labor of love, with my husband, Vernon, and I paying for a majority of the food the first 2 years. But over the years, donors and donations have increased, along with grant opportunities to pay for food. The food pantry proudly states that it never closed during the COVID pandemic, when the community started delivering food to the senior members of the church. As the congregation has aged, so have the members of the food pantry committee. Several now in their 80s and 90s continue to serve. We are blessed to have community volunteers over the years to support the ministry. Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority, Epsilon Epsilon Omega Chapter adopted the food pantry in 2015 and has provided volunteers. The sorority and the Winding Ivy Community Development Foundation have co-sponsored the Thanksgiving Baskets giveaway since 2020. Each year, 125 to 153 baskets have been given to families. Volunteers over the years have also come from the Girl Scouts, Boy Scouts, Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity, Kappa Alpha Psi Fraternity, Prince Hall Mason, number 18, Kappa League, Pilgrim Baptist Church Praise Dancers, and the UI College of Medicine. The founding community members include Vernon and I, Dora Jamerson, Ethel Mae Kennedy, Kathy Lockett, Gloria Dixon, Patricia Walker, Lula Connor, Mae Kendrick, Beverly Lewis, Ronald Lewis, Josephine Samuel, Bobby Hunt, Robert Elam, and Mary Williams. The present-day committee includes me, the Lewises, Charles Drake, Marilyn Thaddison, Nate Dixon, Lola Cockrell, Lula Connor, Donna Tinsley, Dee Dee Weatherspoon, Kathy Lockett, and Nettie Howell, with additional help from Lisa Cockrell, Philip March, Mike Woods, Bill Connor, James Reynolds, and Frank Archie of Kappa Alpha Psi. The pastor is the Reverend Dion Broughton. It's hard work, but the benefits of giving and serving your community go far beyond fulfilling the needs of others. Giving provides hope, purpose, self-worth, and responsibility. Working in the food pantry has strengthened our sense of purpose to do what God has called us to do. We joyfully serve and give of our time, resources, and talents with love. Larry D. Boone, Urbana Police Chief. I'm honored to receive this recognition from the NAACP of Champaign County. It means so much to be acknowledged by an organization doing such vital work in our community. The Urbana Police Department's strategy for tracking firearms and combating gun violence is grounded in intelligence-led policing, underpinned by a strong analytical framework. While we are still in the early stages of this process, significant credit goes to the criminal intelligence analyst, crime analyst, and the dedicated staff of the Urbana Police Department for their critical contributions and commitment. Crime and criminal intelligence analysts play distinct but interdependent roles in this model. The crime analyst focuses on identifying geographic patterns and temporal trends in firearm-related incidents, enabling data-informed deployment and prevention strategies. Simultaneously, criminal intelligence analysts target the individuals and networks responsible for illegal gun trafficking, leveraging tools such as link analysis and ballistic data systems to drive investigations and dismantle trafficking operations. Together, these functions inform our crime meeting process, ensuring strategic decisions are grounded in timely, actionable intelligence. One of our most impactful achievements has been the transformation of raw data into operational intelligence that drives proactive intervention. By systematically analyzing firearm recoveries and tracing their origins, we have gained clear visibility into the mechanisms fueling gun crime in Urbana. Our analysis reveals a consistent influx of firearms trafficked from out-of-state markets with weaker regulations, often facilitated by straw purchasers. We have also seen a significant increase in the presence of unserialized, privately manufactured firearms commonly referred to as ghost guns. and we will continue with the end of this story after our short break, where we'll return with our second half hour of the News Gazette, dated Friday, October 24th, 2025. Please stay tuned.